So here in our text in Daniel 11, we got down to verse 36. And I want to read Daniel 11:35 to get the connection here. As we read, some of them of understanding shall fall to try them and to purge and to make them white, even to the time of the end. Then you will notice the latter phrase of verse 35, because it is yet for a time appointed. And that leads us in to the last days. These other verses, as we've already have, are history. There is no prophetic value to them insofar as anything that is going to happen in our day, and it would be wrong for one to try and to put something in there that is going to be fulfilled today as a sign of our times. All of that has been fulfilled. And so from here, it is yet a time for a time appointed. Then we come to verse 36, and the king shall do according to his will. Now, it's very important that we understand the king that we are talking about here is actually the Antichrist. And he shall exalt himself, he shall magnify himself above every god. That's exactly the same message that we find in 2 Thessalonians 2:4, who says that he will oppose and exalt himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple. This is what the Antichrist will do as he sets up his image, insisting that men worship him rather than, number one, the Almighty God. But as we've already seen in Daniel, there will come a time when the Antichrist is going to take away all religious worship. No matter what it is, he will take away all of it because he will insist that men will worship himself. And so he shall exalt himself. He'll magnify himself above every god. And notice further that he shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods. He is gathered together against God himself, and most specifically of Christ himself, because you remember it is at this time that Jesus Christ will be reigning as God Almighty, as the God of the universe. So he's against the God of gods. He shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. That is, till the great tribulations. That's what the great to the indignation years refers to here, is the great tribulation. And he is going to prosper until that is finished. And then you will notice the last phrase of this verse, for that is determined. In other words, it is determined that the Antichrist shall rule for a certain period of time. And so we find out that regardless of what men do or try to change or try to prevent, then God's word has prophesied certain things and they are going to be fulfilled. And one of the things that God has prophesied, we're going to see more of that tonight, is that the Antichrist will be given 1260 days. We're going to see that later on in this chapter, that God has allotted the Antichrist to be in absolute power for 1260 days, which means the last 3.5 years of the tribulation period. Now, let us understand, because we will see this more and more as we go on into throughout Daniel and on into the book of Revelation. The Antichrist will be around long before that 1260-day period. He will be in the world and making covenants with the Jews, according to Daniel 9:27, from the very beginning of the tribulation period. But his allotted time is only the last 1260 days of the tribulation, as we are going to see a little bit later on. Now, I want to also point out here, as we noted from the from verse 34, that is the appointed time, the latter day. This verse takes us to the end time in fulfillment of Daniel 10:14. And that is the burden of this final vision, where God told Daniel, "Now I am come to make thee understand what shall befall thy people." This is really the primary theme of this last vision that Daniel has, is what is going to happen to the Jews. What is going to transpire? And of course, one answer to that is they are going to be given over into the hand of the Antichrist, who is going to oppress them unmercifully. But as we're also going to find, God will preserve this people. He is going to save them, deliver them, and while the Antichrist will be thrown out into annihilation, oblivion, the Jews are going to be spared. So these words, these final words, are really especially in regard to the land, that is Israel. We'll see more of that in verses 39 to 41 of this chapter. We're talking about the land of Palestine. And so you'll notice God was going to make Daniel to understand what would happen in the latter days, for the vision is yet for many days. We have come down, literally speaking, we have come down to those last days. And we are living in the early days, as it were, of the last days here. Now, this king, once again, we have identified him as the Antichrist. We will see that reinforced more and more as we go into this chapter. But this is the same little horn that we saw in Daniel 7. And again, just for to repeat and to clarify, the little horn of Daniel 7 is the Antichrist. The little horn of Daniel 8 is the false prophet. Now, both of them are somewhat brought together there in chapter 8, and now I'm down here in chapter 11. But we must keep them separate, because the false prophet comes ahead of the Antichrist in order to introduce him. And you will notice here again in this verse that he shall do according to his will. That means that God will allow the Antichrist to pursue the full intent of Satan. We are going to find, once again, in these next few verses, that he will be given 1260 days in order to do that. And so he will actually finish out this indignation, or this day of tribulation. Notice further what he will do in verse 37. "Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall magnify himself above all." This is a very interesting verse, which actually tells us that the Antichrist is against the entire Trinity. The God of his fathers would refer to the Father, the God of both the Old Testament and the New. The desire of women is a reference to Christ, because you see, he was the desire of women. All of those women, those virgins, would wonder, "Am I to be the one? Will I bring forth?" Because a virgin shall conceive, promised Isaiah. And these women had to wonder, and they had that desire. And of course, that was finally realized by Mary. And then any God is a reference to the power of the Holy Spirit, who is, of course, a part of the Godhead. Well, in verse 38, we read that in his estate shall he honor the God of forces. the god of forces locally would have been, of course, the gods of Rome. But here, the only force that the Antichrist understands is actually of Satan. He will be empowered by Satan. And we will see that brought out very clearly in the book of Revelation. And then you will also find Satan is acknowledged as that god of forces when he offered to give Jesus, as he said, remember in Matthew 4, all these kingdoms will I give to you if you bow down and worship me. The fact is, they were his to give. He won that dominion from Adam, and he became the god of this world. He became the prince of the power of the air. And so now then, he indeed is the god of forces insofar as the Antichrist is concerned. He's a god whom his fathers knew not, shall he honor with gold and silver, precious stones, and pleasant things. Again, that tells us of his allegiance to Satan himself. He gives that with all of these riches. In verse 39, thus shall he do in the most strongholds with a strange god, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory. The Revised Version has a little bit different wording on that, and it seems to be a little bit clearer. He shall deal with the strongest fortresses by the help of a foreign god. And that just simply means exactly what it says. The Antichrist will rule by the power of Satan. And of course, both the Antichrist and the false prophet are empowered. The false prophet will do great signs and wonders, even raising the Antichrist from the dead, as we see there in Revelation. Nothing shall be impossible for this man, because he really is empowered by Satan himself. He will be an impostor of the true Christ, who really is capable of all. And so he shall increase with glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land. Now, this is a very interesting portion of this verse, because the land that we're talking about here is actually Israel. And this is what it finally comes down to. That's why I say that when God was telling Daniel what shall befall his people in the end time, he's talking there about the Jew, and the Antichrist is very much interconnected with that, because the Antichrist seeks to absolutely annihilate the Jew and to take his land. We see that manifest already. The spirit of Antichrist is just prevailing throughout this world among those who want to move in and take the land of Israel. And so at this time he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain, that is, for a price. There are many waiting in line today for a piece of that land, and they really are willing to pay the price in order to get it. There will be those who will reign in league with the Antichrist. For example, the kings of Revelation 17:12 are going to reign with the beast 1 hour. As we get over into that chapter, and we have brought out before, we are firmly convinced that those kings are really a reference to many of the terror groups around our world today. And what is their objective? Israel. And so they want that land. They would drive them completely out of that land into the Mediterranean, as has been said many times. And so they want a piece of that land, and again are willing to pay a price in order to get it. And then I want to emphasize once again that the beast that we see there in Revelation 13, having seven heads and 10 horns, that includes the Antichrist, but that is the whole coalition, and it will eventually be reduced to one man. And it is this one man that we're talking about here, this Antichrist. There are Revelation, the book of Revelation will tell us how that is reduced down to that one. There were seven, and then there were five, and then on down to where there will be only two. And one of those two that is left will be the Antichrist. Now, in verse 40, this is once again speaking of the time when this seven-headed coalition with the ten horns has been reduced to the one man. And at that time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots and horsemen and with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. Now, again, I want to notice how that there is going to be such warfare among the nations during this time. Even after the Antichrist comes to power, there will be those who are trying desperately to resist him. They want to overthrow him. And so here we find they're pushing at him from the south. They're pushing at him from the north. We'll see more about that here in just a moment. But I also want to take this opportunity to show once again that the Antiochus that many believe was the prophesied one, and that was just what we have in Daniel 8, was the prophecy that was fulfilled at that time concerning just Antiochus. Here we find exactly the same thing. The prophecy of Daniel 8 reaches down to the end time, because Antiochus is completely gone, and yet this is the end time here in history that we are talking about. You will notice here that both the king of the south and the king of the north are coming against this present king, the Antichrist. The king of Syria, or the north, it was so dominant in chapter 8, 9, would not be pushing against himself. See, we can't be talking about, this cannot be referring to Antiochus here. It has to be talking about the things of the end time. So Daniel is not just talking about the local man Antiochus. He is rather telling us that Antiochus is a figurative person, and he is simply typical of the Antichrist of the end time. And again, the reason for that, because Antiochus was from the north. He would not have been pushing against himself, and yet this prophecy says that a king of the south will push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him. Again, we'll see something about that here in just a moment. We will see in verse 44, let's skip down and read verse 44. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. And undoubtedly that means the Jews. We'll see that here in just a moment. What I'm getting at here, they're pushing from the south, they're pushing from the north. He hears in verse 44 that the tidings out of the east and the north. We have accounted for three different directions. So this must very well mean that the Antichrist is especially going to be at least associated with the West. And so we find today that it is divided into East and West. Well, when all of these things are said and done, then all of the territory, so to speak, that the Antichrist has assumed and the leadership that he has assumed, and perhaps it's because of those countries that he has indeed overthrown and eliminated, then he may be more identified with the West than in any other direction. Again, this somewhat makes sense because if you'll remember, Daniel saw the 10 horns, and 3 of them were plucked up by the roots. Well, if they are, they will be taken over. And so that means that the Antichrist, who was instrumental in plucking them up, he would be taking them over. He would be assuming that rule over them. And so it can very well be that the Antichrist be more associated with the West here. Now, I want to also notice the deterioration of this coalition. As I said, we read that there were 10 horns that Daniel saw, and they were reduced to 7. Now, Revelation 17, verses 10 and 11 tell us of those 7 horns or 7 kings. We have pointed out also that the reason that Daniel saw 10 and John saw only 7 is because Daniel saw it at an earlier time. He saw this coalition at an earlier time than did John. John never did see this coalition when there were 10 nations there. He only saw it when there were 7. And so Revelation 17, 10 and 11 says this: there are 7 kings. It starts out that way in the very beginning of the tribulation. It is known as this beast. 5 are fallen. That is, 5 more kings have succumbed. Perhaps some of these out of the north and out of the east and out of the south, who were pushing against him. We could very well see how that all of that warfare is going to reduce these national powers. So 5 are fallen. 1 is, and the other is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the 8th, and is of the 7, and goes into perdition. This one that is left standing out of all of these kings that began as 10, were reduced to 7, came down to 5, and now then down to 2, and then 1, the one who is left standing is the Antichrist. And you will notice verse 41 tells you what his objective is. This is why, again, we say that the primary theme of this last vision that Daniel had was in relation to the Jews. That was the burden that Daniel had. What is going to happen to my people? And so here we find in verse 41, he, that means the Antichrist, shall enter into the glorious land. The glorious land is a reference to Israel. And they are the primary target of the Antichrist. And many countries shall be overthrown. And that's absolutely right. The Antichrist is going to overthrow everything in his path, and just leave nothing but death and destruction in his wake. And so he shall enter into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon. These 3 are for some reason spared annihilation by the Antichrist, and they will undoubtedly be joined unto him in some measure. They may also be a part of those that we saw in verse 39. You remember those who wanted a part of the glorious land and were willing to pay a price for it. So perhaps they bought their way, or will buy their way, into favor with the Antichrist and get a part of this land. In verse 42, he shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. And that is rather interesting, because while these others are said to specifically escape, they are not annihilated by the Antichrist. They're not swallowed up, again, more than likely because they have made some kind of a league with him. The land of Egypt is specifically targeted that they shall not escape. Verse 43, but he shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. And this verse 43 is just a reminder of what we read there in Revelation. No man may buy or sell without the mark of the Antichrist. He will control everything, all of the gold, the silver, precious things, all of this. And these others will simply be at his steps, meaning they must succumb to him. They must bow to him and just absolutely be subject to him. Of course, he will be greatly enriched by all of them. Verse 45, but the tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. That means that there are still those, specifically here, out of the east and out of the north, that are trying to come against him. Therefore, he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and to utterly make away many. And undoubtedly, the many talking about the Jew. And so he is trying to completely enforce his own will on everyone, which is exactly what we read at the very beginning of this discourse there in verse 35, he was going to have this, be given this power overall. So here, the east and the north indeed come again and push at him. And so undoubtedly, once again, we point out, he must have some kind of power or control or affiliation with the West. In verse 45, he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas. Notice where it is, in the glorious holy mountain. It is still the Jew that he is after. It is that holy city of Jerusalem. This is where all of the target is going to be. This is where this is going to be the point of gathering, so to speak, in that day. But I am glad for the latter part of this verse. There are so many of our day clamoring for Jerusalem. As I said, everybody wants a part of this little old tiny nation, and most specifically, the city of Jerusalem, that is Zion, according to God's reckoning. And so the Antichrist is going to plant the tabernacles of his palaces between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. Yet notice the last part of this verse. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. That is a clear reference to Armageddon and to the destruction of the Antichrist. God is going to destroy him. None shall be able to help him from that strong arm of God. And so we read here that the Antichrist will be given this time to reign, but when that has run out, then it has indeed run out, and he will be judged, and as we find from the New Testament, cast into the lake of fire. This brings us to chapter 12, which is a continuation of these same last days. And so in verse 1 we read, at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which stands for the children of thy people. Again, keep in mind that God is especially addressing Daniel's question as to what shall befall my people. And now then God is telling him that Michael, we have already found out, is the prince of Israel. From that we deduce that every nation has a prince over them, indeed a godly prince. We know that they have satanic princes, as we had the prince of Persia and the prince of the Medes and these others that are over those nations. But there are also these godly nations, and there is a prince of God, as it were, an angel of God over them, Michael, we are specifically told, is over Israel, and what princes or angels might be over other nations, we're simply not told. But here I want to notice, at that time shall Michael stand up. Now that time seems to be an indication of the middle of the week. And we find it in Revelation 12, verses 7 to 9, because that's when Satan and his host is cast out of heaven. And here's what we read in Revelation 12, 7 to 9. There was war in heaven, Michael and his angels. As we read here in verse 1 of Daniel, at that time Michael shall stand up, the great prince. Well, in Revelation 12, Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels, and prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. I say once again that this happens very close to the middle of the week. And this is very important, because it is at this time that God begins to stand up and to defend his people Israel. The Antichrist will make a covenant with Israel at the beginning of the week. He will break that covenant, and when he does, then God is going to step in and defend his people Israel. The Antichrist, we're going to find out here in just a little while, is given exactly 1260 days to rule. From the time that he officially comes to power until his reign is completely over will be, again, exactly 1260 days. And you will notice here, there shall be a time of trouble. And again, we're pointing out to the same period of time. We are speaking here of the last half of the tribulation period. So there shall come a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time, thy people, that is the Jews, Daniel's people, shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. Now, these are marvelous words for Israel, because they have been slated for annihilation by the Antichrist. But God is not going to allow that to happen. And so when the Antichrist is granted, or he begins his official time, that is when, as we read here, Michael and his angels stood up and fought against Satan and his angels. And at that same time, we read, there shall be a time of trouble. That's none other than the Battle of Armageddon, or it will end with the Battle of Armageddon. This will be the time when God will stand up and defend his people. We will find this, and we will study it there in the 12th chapter of Revelation, because this is when God will protect the woman in the wilderness for the last 1260 days of the tribulation period. Jeremiah 30 and verse 7, that is a verse that we have referred to repeatedly in this class, because it records the time of Jacob's trouble. The time of Jacob's trouble is specifically that last 1260 days of the tribulation. And he preaches the same message as Daniel here in this present verse. Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. And there will be no day like that when when God comes on the scene and indeed pours out his judgment and delivers this little nation of Israel. Now, I also want to notice here where it says verse 1, At that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. It means, of course, written in the Lamb's book of life. Those who are written there are going to be spared. They are going to be delivered. God will see to that, that indeed they are preserved. Verse 2, and many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. And you can notice the division that we have here. Some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. We will see later in the 20th chapter of Revelation that these two resurrections are actually 1,000 years apart. But this division has always been with anyone. He's especially here talking about Israel and those who shall be delivered there. But it is true of all men. And that is, either they are going to be found in the Lamb's Book of Life, and they will be raised up at the beginning of the millennial period, or they will not be found in the Lamb's Book of Life, and these will not have their resurrection until after the 1,000 years are over. And when they are resurrected, it will be raised up to be cast into the lake of fire. As we find here, again, verse 2, many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life. That will be consummated before, at the very beginning of the 1,000-year reign of Christ, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. That will be at the end of the 1,000-year reign of Christ. Verse 3, and they that be wise. This has to be the wise of Israel, for Daniel was oblivious to the church age. Church age not even mentioned here at all. We are talking about those of the Jews. And so, they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. We have stated again and again that down through the ages, regardless of how bad the spiritual declension may have been, God has always, always, always had a faithful remnant. And so there will be those in this time, during such a horrible time of testing and tribulation and desolation that will prevail upon the earth, there will be those who shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness. They indeed will have the same spirit of understanding that we found of those in chapter 11:33, who instructed others even at the expense of their own lives. The same type of people will be alive and well during this tribulation period, even such a very difficult time as that of Jacob's trouble. In verse 4 we read, but thou, O Daniel, shut up the words, seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. And so again, we are back to Daniel, who must realize that deliverance for his people is not going to be coming anyway soon. He is told to shut up the words, to seal the book. Why? Because it is not going to happen for many, many days. God knew that, of course, the remaining time until Messiah would be revealed. And then God knew that the church age would be inserted there. And this all happens, what we read here in these words, happen after the church age is over. And that time is getting very, very close. Now, I want to notice here that sometimes people get the idea when you read these words, "O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book." That means that God never did intend for anyone to understand it. That's not so. He didn't intend for them to understand and to know what was happening until the time of the end. And Daniel is not a sealed book. Revelation is not a sealed book. We can understand these glorious truths, and we must, because they are for this time. That's exactly what God meant, that this must be saved until the time in which it will actually happen. So Daniel shut up the words and sealed the book even to the time of the end. Then this last phrase is something that we can really see happening in our own day. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. And look at the knowledge and the technology that is being unveiled in every area of life. And much of that knowledge is not good. Just check the hacking into emails and all of these various things that men are using in order to, for their own advantage, to pry into the lives of others. And look at all of the technology and nuclear warheads and warfare and weapons and biological warfare, all sorts of knowledge. There is good knowledge. We understand that. Look at the breakthroughs that men have had in being able to implant other organs and do all of the heart transplants and so many breakthroughs in the medical field, and so many things that are done. So there is a universal, so to speak, increase of knowledge. But again, we would point out all of that knowledge is not really a good thing. But when all of this knowledge increases, it is just another sign that we are in these last days. We are actually in the appointed time that God told Daniel about. All right, let's take about 5 minutes and we'll finish the book of Daniel. And we come now to verse 5. And this is where that Daniel gets into another part of this vision. It's all considered really one vision. But in verse 5 we read, "Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, there stood other two, the one on this side of the bank of the river, and the other on that side of the bank of the river. And one said to the man clothed in linen." And this man clothed in linen would be exactly the same man as Daniel saw in chapter 8, 15, and 16, and also in chapter 10, 5. They are all Christ himself. And so he was clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river. How long shall it be to the end of these wonders? Now, the wonders he's talking about is those wonders that we've just preceded here, those things concerning all of the actions atrocities of the Antichrist. And so the question is, how long until these wonders cease, or how long until the reign of Antichrist is over, is another way we might put it. And in verse 7, "I heard the man clothed in linen, which is upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand unto heaven, and swore by him that liveth forever." If you will check Revelation 10, verses 1 to 7, we find almost exactly this same scene. And so the question is asked, how long shall this be? How long is this going to last, really the rule of Antichrist? And here's the answer. "It shall be for a time, times, and a half. And translated, it means this. Time means 1 year. Times means 2 years. Half a time means a half a year or 6 months. You put those together, and it means 3 1/2 years. And then, if you translate that to days, it means 1,260 days. This becomes the rule of the Antichrist. And so in answer to that question. And so this refers to that 1,260 days when the Antichrist will do according to his will. As we found in chapter 11:36, that he will do, will be allowed to do according to his will. That means whatever he wants to accomplish his own will, then that's exactly what he will be able to bring to pass.
What was that reference? Revelation
10, verses 1 to 7. And it gives you exactly the same time periods and everything that is listed here. And so, continuing here in verse 7, and when he shall have accomplished. And here is what God is intending him to accomplish. You know, when men start out to do things and they're allowed to do that, God lets them do it, they think they are just doing exactly everything they want. Everything is just within their own power. But the thing is, God always uses these men, even ungodly men, to accomplish his purposes. And notice what that is. When he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people. This is what God intended him to do. He had to scatter the power of the holy people, that is the Jews. In other words, Israel has been given the opportunity to exhaust all of their resources. They made the covenant with the Antichrist, and then of course he break that covenant, and then God comes in for them, as we have seen in these early verses of this chapter. But in between all of that, Israel has been allowed to completely exhaust all of their resources. The nations have failed them. Everyone else that they've ever entrusted has failed them. And they have been brought to the place where now they must believe God. They must trust the Lord. And so God's agenda for them and God's objective for them was always that the power of this holy people should be scattered. When that happens, then all these things shall be finished. And it's no wonder that we read in Daniel, in verse 8 of this chapter, Daniel says, I heard, but I understood not. In other words, Daniel could not really put all of this in perspective insofar as his own people, the Jews, were concerned. But God is faithful, and so, then said I, O my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed, and you can underline it again, till the time of the end. And so these things are not going to happen. There's not going to be anything transpire until the time of the end. And that is going to be well beyond Daniel's day. Now, notice verse 10. Many shall be purified. This is one of the things that God wanted, that God was trying to get. One of his objectives is that Israel should be purified. If you read so many messages and texts in the Old Testament concerning the condition of Israel, in their rebellious condition, in their backslidden condition, in their idolatrous condition, God had to bring them to that place where they should be purified. It is this time of tribulation, specifically the time of Jacob's trouble, that will purify them. And so we read here, many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly. Again, you find this very stark separation. And God has always made that separation. The white from the dark, the pure from the unclean, all of this, God makes that distinction himself. And so these, once again, are proven to be, there are those who are made white and they are tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And so the purpose of the tribulation is really to separate the righteous from the wicked, and God will do just exactly that. Verse 11, and from the time that the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, and the abomination that maketh desolate set up, there shall be 1,290 days. There are three major timelines we're going to see here in these last few verses. They become very important to us in establishing exact times in the tribulation period. This is the first of those timelines. We read about the daily sacrifice being taken away in chapter 8. We have stated repeatedly that that prophecy was not fulfilled during the time of Antiochus, as some try to indicate. The taking away of the daily sacrifice is yet to happen. It is a part of end time experience. And so here is one of those timelines. From the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away until the abomination of desolation is set up. Now Jesus, Daniel 9:27 talks about in the midst of the week shall the abomination of desolation set up. Jesus spoke of it also in Matthew 24. From the time the daily sacrifice is taken away till the time the Antichrist sets up his image in the temple will be 1,290 days. From the taking away of the daily sacrifice then to the middle of the week is 1,290 days. And then from the taking away of the daily sacrifice to the end of the tribulation period, that is, when the temple is cleansed, that will be exactly 2,300 days. Now, we will see this more as we get on into the book of Revelation, but for now, we must establish the fact that these days are based on Jewish times. When Jesus takes over, when he is installed on his throne as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, Gentile times will officially be over and Jewish times will have begun. The Jewish calendar is 12 months in the year, 360 days, 30 days per month. Exactly. That's how God can predict these days as he does. It's not 365 plus days in a year. There are 360 days in a year. There are 12 months in a year. There are 30 days to each month. And that is the time that God has used in laying out these tribulation days. So from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away to the very end of the tribulation period when the Antichrist is annihilated and the temple is cleansed, will be 2,300 days. And then verse 12 brings us to another. Now this does not specifically say that it begins with the daily sacrifice, but being with these other two, it has to. There is just no other way. There's no other explanation in Scripture regarding it. Verse 12, blessed is he that waits and comes to the 1,305 days. Now this is 1,335 days that I don't find anywhere else in the Scripture. What we do find is that the one that waits and comes to this time is blessed. So it has to be some momentous event of blessing. It has to be some great thing, and blessing in Scripture, as we find with the 70 weeks, is generally associated with Christ himself. And I believe that is exactly what we have here. I think this is the same time that Jesus refers to in Matthew 24:13 when he said this, he that endureth to the end, and he means the end of that devastating time, he that endures to the end of that time shall be saved. We know that some of the Jewish nation will be preserved completely through the tribulation period. We know many of them will be martyred. Revelation plainly tells us that. But there will be some of those Jews who will be preserved bodily throughout the entire length of the tribulation period. And so he that endureth to the end shall be saved, as Jesus says. Now, this 1,335 days has to be when the Antichrist really takes control. I said from the time of the daily sacrifice, really has to be from the time that the Antichrist takes his control. As we're going to find from the book of Revelation, that will be about 250 days before the middle of the week. So we're talking about the 1,335 days would begin when the Antichrist takes control. He will rule 1,260 days. And then the 1,330, if you subtract 1,260 from 1,335, you get 75 days. So this time where he says, blessed is he that comes to 1,305 days, that's 75 days after the Antichrist, the rule of Antichrist, is over. And that would certainly be a glorious time of blessing. But what will actually happen there? And I think that is very easy to interpret if you compare it with Revelation 1:7. Because this is the time when every eye shall see him, and they also which pierced him. This means that Jesus will make his appearance for every eye to see about 75 days after the reign of Antichrist is over. That's why he said, blessed is he that waits and comes to the 1,305 days. He will make his official appearance to the nation of Israel as he begins this real utopian reign of peace there in the millennium. Now, again, let us keep in mind that this whole vision has been primarily about the Jew and when they would be delivered. Now we have reached the end of that. They have been delivered from the reign, the oppression, the rule of the Antichrist. And 75 days later, it seems that Jesus is going to make his appearance again. Revelation 1:7, every eye shall see him. Verse 13, but go thy way, till the end be. For thou shalt rest. I think that Daniel has already decided that he's not going to be around to see this. He realizes that so many of these things that he had seen are not going to transpire until after he has already passed off the scene. So we read here, go thy way till the end, thou shalt rest. And then I love this last part. And stand in thy lot at the end of the days. And it means that Daniel would not be a part of anything more until Jesus is reigning as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. But what is he supposed to do? You rest, Daniel, and then stand in thy lot at the end of the days. And I believe from these words that Daniel will have his own special lot at that time as the faithful man who would receive all of these revelations and pass them on, believe God to tell him what they meant and to write them down. And then, of course, he had such a tremendous heart for the Jew to faithfully pray for them, to believe God for them, and had such a tremendous shepherd's heart for them. I believe he will have his own lot, that is, his own special place, his own special reward that God will give him at that time, and Daniel will finally see the wonderful outcome with all of these people that he was so concerned about. And thus we come to the end of the book of Daniel.